This is Weighing In with Travis Hartman, possibly the most important podcast you'll hear ever in your life, ever. Welcome to another episode of Weighing In with Travis Hartman, where we pepper your eardrums talking about boxing, sports, life, whatever comes to mind. That over there is Travis Hartman. I'm Brandon Waters. Thanks for joining us. Before we start, we just ask that if you like what you hear or you've followed our stuff, please hit a little like, a little heart, maybe even more follows. Just forward it on to your friends. We appreciate all the support. Obviously, if you want to comment, and I think the kids are calling it trolling, if you want to troll us, we're more than happy to respond in kind. So with that, once again, that over there across the table is Travis Hartman. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers, brother. It's good to be back with you.
All right, so we're weighing in. Travis, what are we weighing in on today?
We finally have some big-time fights that we can talk about. Of course, we always got the Tyson-Jones Jr. fight, but let's talk about the real fights that are getting ready to happen, and that's Errol Spence just announced that he's going to fight Danny Garcia November 21st, which is a big fight, and I'll tell you why it's a big fight. It's a big fight because Errol Spence, in a lot of people's minds, is pound for pound, one of the top five pound for pound guys in the world, on a lot of people's lists. And I put him up there too. He's definitely up there, and he's highly regarded, undefeated fighter. However, back in October of 2019, he crashed his white Ferrari while drinking at about 3 a.m. in Texas, where he's from. And he ended up being in ICU, and a lot of the rumblings underneath the underground part of boxing said that he'll never come back and fight again. Like, a lot of very well-known people that I trust and talk to literally told me the same thing. They're like, he's never going to fight again. Guess what? He's fighting November 21st against Danny Garcia. Danny Garcia is a multiple-time world champion. Danny Garcia has been in the ring with all of the top names. I mean, Keith Thurman, anybody that you can think of, Danny Garcia has fought him. That guy's never walked away from a fight. And now he's going to face Errol Spence. Before this fight ever happened, before Errol Spence got in a car wreck, I 100% was like, Errol Spence is going to knock out Danny Garcia. I don't know about now. It's such a toss-up. So as time gets closer, I'll nail down who I think is going to win and how they're going to win. I think Errol Spence wins, but I don't know how yet.
So massive fight for Errol Spence coming back. No lead-up before that. You know, if experts are saying that they thought he wasn't even going to fight again, let alone, you know, resume the kind of normal life or any sort of fitness career. He's fighting Danny Garcia.
World champ, former world champion.
That's
multiple world champion.
So that is a pretty tough test right out of the gate. Give me a rundown. I always say put the different hats on, so put the fighter hat on right now and give me the point of view of Danny Garcia leading into this
fight. I mean, for Danny Garcia, this is a huge fight because he can win this fight if the Errol Spence that we know doesn't show up. And by all means, like, everybody's talked about this. I mean, I think there's something in an ego of a boxer that you have to have, right? You have to have that ego to think that you can always do whatever. So I think that Errol Spence has that ego. I'm hoping the people around him have it in check, meaning that I hope that he is okay to resume. And the fact that they're coming right out and fighting Danny Garcia, shocking to me. Shocking. If I'm putting my promoter hat on, if I'm Errol Spence's promoter, stupid fight. In my opinion, stupid fight. First fight back, no tune-up after being out of the ring like that, stupid fight.
Okay, so but let me ask you then, on this side, for Danny Garcia, is this a lose-lose sort of fight? If he wins, is he expected to win? Because there's been such a time off of Errol Spence, and obviously he came off that car accident. And if he loses, How does that look, given the same circumstance? I mean, if you take Errol Spence, on the other hand, is there really a lose situation here? What's the expectation of him back in the ring?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point, because the critics are tough. The media, they're tough. So whether you win or lose, they're going to have some kind of excuse right at the end of the day. But I'll tell you what, if you're Danny Garcia, it doesn't matter. If you beat Errol Spence, period, it's a win. That's a win-win, because even if everybody says, oh my gosh, you know, Errol wasn't the same, who cares? It's on his resume now. In 2, 3, 4 years down the road, they're going to see that Danny Garcia beat Errol Spence when Errol Spence was undefeated. So I think it's a win-win for Danny Garcia. One, because it's a lot of money. It's a big fight because it's on Fox pay-per-view. This is a pay-per-view fight. So I think that it's a win-win for Danny Garcia. And I don't necessarily see it as a lose-lose for Errol Spence either, because if he does lose, people are going to be like, oh my gosh, he came out and he fought Danny Garcia right away. But it depends on how he loses and how he looks. Because all of the experts, we're going to watch that fight really close, and we're going to see if that's the Errol Spence that we remember. And that's if his body is reacting the way that it used to. So it's, I'm watching this fight very closely, because if the wreck doesn't happen last year and they make this fight, this is a blockbuster fight. I mean, this is Danny Garcia versus Errol Spence, undefeated Errol Spence. So it's a blockbuster fight.
So then let me ask you, from your experience, obviously that's a bit different of an injury situation. Have you ever had to come back from injury from any of your career? It took time off because of some significant injury.
I actually have. I got in a car wreck before I was supposed to fight Jermell Charlo, who is a big player in the 154-pound division.
And when was this?
This was February of 2010. I got in a car wreck. I was supposed to fight him on ESPN. Golden Boy card, big time card. I was literally headed to the hospital to get my physical before I left for Texas, is where I was fighting him on ESPN. I'm headed to the hospital to get my physical, literally headed to the hospital, and I get in a car wreck. Somebody rear-ends me from the back. So fast forward, I was off for like 2.5 years, and my first fight back, I never stepped it up. My first two fights back, because you don't know. Like, you just don't know how your body's going to react. Like, my training went phenomenal, but you just don't know how your body's going to react to that other competition as well. So I had to step back with a little lower level competition, and I kind of tipped my feet in the water a little bit and then slowly stepped it up. And then my third fight back, I fought a pretty big name guy. I fought Haskell Rhodes, who was undefeated, been trained by Floyd Mayweather Sr. at the time. So I jumped right back in my third fight, but not my first fight.
So not exactly the same. I mean, obviously two car wrecks, but you can at least, from the psychology of it, you have a good idea of what Errol Spence might be thinking. You mentioned that the training camp side of it, the training trained well, whatever else, once you were able to do so. What about when your boots hit the apron? What about when you stepped into that ring? What was the difference then? You know, obviously it's always a little different just from if you're just fighting anyways, but now coming off of a big injury, 2.5 years off, what's the difference from training and then those two steps you took up onto the apron of the ring?
So, I mean, it's a big difference. However, Errol Spence is on another level, meaning, like, he's been there. He has. He knows what to expect. But is his body going to react that way? And I hope to God that his trainer, I think it's Derek James is his trainer's name, I hope to God that they're paying close attention to him in training, because the one person that knows about that fighter and how they react in that gym is that trainer. And he's been with this trainer for a long time. So I'm counting on this guy. Derek James is a good guy, good trainer. I'm counting on him to know what he's doing with Errol Spence, meaning in their training camp, those guys better be paying close attention. And that's where I'm going to be paying close attention as well, because I'm going to have some eyes in that gym as well, because when I make my prediction, I'm going to make it based on that and based on the people that I know that are watching him train, because that's what matters. If you're training like normal, your body's reacting because you're going through rigorous sparring as well. So if he's in his sparring matches and he's reacting good and doing okay, then I think he's going to be as close to the original Errol Spence as possible. It's going to be impossible to be 100% Errol Spence no matter what, because he's been out of the ring for almost a year. So regardless, there's going to be a little rust. But I just want to know that his body's okay and his body's going to be there.
So big time fight. I know you mentioned it at the onset of our conversation about it. The date again.
November 21st.
So November 21st, around Thanksgiving. Okay, Fox pay-per-view, big-time fight. You know, that's, so we have a lot of things coming towards the end of this year then. Now last week we started talking, and it was a little tongue-in-cheek a little bit about our conversation about the exhibition fight with Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. I think that's September 12th, correct?
September 12th, yes.
September 12th. So that's right around the corner. I mean, this is, we're speaking right now, it's the first week of August. So that is just a few weeks away.
You know what's cool about that? Tyson's talking smack. As of today, Tyson goes, if I get the chance, he's like, I'm going to try to knock him out. Literally, this is out of Tyson's mouth. So I think it's going to heat up because it is an exhibition. But like me and you talked last week, as a fighter, as a competitor, you can pitter-pat around all you want. But in boxing, once you get caught, they're killers. Both of them are killers.
Yeah,
that pride comes in.
The pride takes over. The ego takes over. And that's fine. I don't care if you're 50 years old. I don't care how old you are.
It's still there.
It's still there. You're a man, right?
Yeah.
So, All right, so that's in September.
September 12th, yep.
I'm sure, so we have a few weeks here as we lead up to that. That's going to be all the hype. We're going to be talking about it. You know, so we can easily just kind of put that on the shelf right now, unless there's something juicy you want to mention about any of the trash talk yet. I don't know if there has been.
That's the juiciest so far.
Okay.
I haven't heard Roy Jones Jr.'s reply back, but I'm sure he'll have.
So no eating children or maybe grandchildren at this point? We're not going there yet?
I really hope Tyson is above that, but let's not. Tyson's not above anything. I mean, the guy's got a face tattoo.
Everyone flips a switch.
Got a face tattoo.
Dude, when he first got that, I used to have, like, when I was growing up, I had Sports Illustrated. There's a subscription, right? So every week, I think it was, I got a new magazine. My favorite cover was right after he had got that thing, or maybe a little after that. And he might have even bit, you know, Vander Holyfield here off at that point.
Yeah, he probably did.
And it's just this cover photo of him, like, just, like, a maniacal laughing look on his face, and it was like, that's the coolest.
Evil.
No, it was just awesome. Like, it was so easy for our culture to kind of, like, you couldn't really vilify the guy because it was just so out there when that stuff with Holyfield happened that, I mean, was anyone really like, oh my gosh, you need to get rid of this guy? Or, I mean, there might have been a small population.
For a second, probably.
For a second, but everyone else was like, entertain me now. You know, are you not entertained? It was like Gladiator.
Are you not entertained?
Yeah. All right, so that's September. Now, we got the Spence Garcia fight. What else is on the calendar? What else is coming up?
They just announced Anthony Joshua is going to fight Kulbrett Pulev at the first week of December, and that's on DAZN. That's DAZN. And Eddie Hearn of Matchroom Boxing just announced that. So what's pretty cool, though, is, which I just found out before this, is somehow mysteriously Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua met up randomly in Spain or something crazy like that, right? So I think it was set up for sure. But
how do you randomly meet up during coronavirus COVID days? How does that happen?
Right. Yeah. You could let your mind wander on that one.
Fair enough. All right. So talk me through. What do you know anything about his competitor?
Yeah, Pulev is a solid guy. I mean, I think he's a top 15 in the world contender. He's there to lose, I'm not trying to be mean, but he's there for Anthony Joshua to have kind of a tune-up fight. He's there for what Errol Spence should have done his first fight back. Okay, he's there as a tune-up fight because I do genuinely believe that Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua will fight in 2021, which is a massive blockbuster fight. Two UK guys, easily two best heavyweights in the world. However, that's the funny thing about when they met in Spain is Tyson Fury was like, hey, you better beat Pulev so we can fight next year. And Joshua said the same thing, said you better beat Deontay Wilder so we can fight. Because that's another one, Tyson Fury and Deontay, it's not set yet, but they are fighting again. And it'll probably be the end of this year as well. So we got some blockbuster fights.
These are some great big
fights. I mean, these are the best heavyweights in the world that are finally, like, mingling, and I like
it. This Travis is such a good time for it. I mean, we talk about this stuff. When you subscribe to this podcast, when you listen to us talk, I know we go off on tangents. We talk sometimes politics. We talk sometimes what's going on in other sports. But there's such a direct correlation with a lot of stuff. With this, such an opportune time for boxing to get it right, because so many other sports are dropping the ball now. Now, ratings have been okay with, you know, some of the sports, baseball, things like that. NBA's ratings have been awful.
I'm going to back you up. Today, they announced that the MLB and the NBA ratings have plummeted.
There we go. So I'm wrong on the one, but I know the NBA for sure.
Yep.
I mean, where's the interest level in this? Where is it?
I think right now, boxing is at the forefront of being able to, one, they're getting a lot of eyes because everybody's home. Everybody's looking for that sport I'm hoping and praying to God right now, because I said this last time, past couple of times, I think the reason why the baseball and the basketball, the ratings are plummeting is because they got political. That's my honest opinion. Take it or leave it, but that's my genuine belief. So
right.
What I'm trying to say is I hope and pray that boxing doesn't get political, because one, I'm tuning in to watch boxing. I am a huge boxing fan, and you know this, everybody that knows me, I'm a huge boxing fan. I've been in boxing my whole life, 30 years actually. Amateur since I was 6 years old, pro since I was 20. So I'm a huge boxing fan, and I don't care who you support. I don't even want to hear my candidate talked about.
Yeah.
I want to watch boxing. And so far, knock on wood, the ESPN fights, the boxing matches, they have not been political, and they've delivered. They've been really good fights. So I genuinely hope that it continues on that path. And I hope politics don't muddy the water of my beautiful and sacred sport of boxing.
We'll see. November's around the corner. However, I think when you look at the sport and aesthetics isn't the right word, but kind of the logistics behind putting a show on, putting it on TV, putting it on pay-per-view, I think there isn't really as many opportune times for the fighters themselves to get political on that stage, because you know, as you just watch the show, as you watch the pay-per-view, it's not, you know, they're not just all on and putting a mic in the guy's face in the locker room, because that's the last thing that you guys want. You don't want to be talking to anybody before your fight. The lead up, maybe the interviews, whatever else, but it's more about the event overall. It's each fight. It's not, and obviously the main event and a couple of fights on the card.
I mean, I think that boxers have plenty of times where they could come in and just drop their political movement or paint whatever slogan on their back during middle of a fight or.
But let's be honest. If someone's tuning into ESPN, which God knows why you would do that at this point, and the average sports fans is asked the question, hey, do you know who Errol Spence is? You think the average sports fan is going to know that? The average sports fan? No. Okay.
I don't think Errol has – he's big time, though, because I think he sold like 50,000 seats in Texas Stadium.
But are you going to know – is the average sports fan going to know who LeBron James is?
Yes.
Okay. Are they going to know who – I don't know, no one knows who Dak Prescott is. But they're going to know, which he hasn't done anything anyway, so good, more power to him.
That was a low blow again.
It is, well, you know.
Listen, keep it above the waist, sir. You're going low right now. One more warning, we're going to have to take a point.
This is PG-13, okay? We're not going below any waist. So I don't know. I applaud them so far. I really hope you're right. I really hope it stays out. Or is done properly. We talk about the proper times of things. We talk about how sports in general, for us as the fan, putting the fan hat on, this is our escape. This is our escape. We are bombarded with this crap every which direction. So for us to watch sports, I mean, I miss it, man. I miss regular football. I mean, college football's all jacked up now.
Oh, you want me to go off on a tangent here?
Please do.
Did you just see The Rock bought majority ownership of the XFL?
Yeah.
They might have found a new fan. I might have to tune in because they're doing everything that you – that's the cool thing about it, and that's the big move that they should be doing is they're letting everything that used to be exciting about the NFL, they're doing it.
Yeah.
You know I mean? Like, they're doing like you're allowed to dance in the end zone after a touchdown.
Sure.
You're allowed to hit hard. All that crazy stuff that we used to love about the NFL, and they've pulled it back, which – I understand a little bit of why the NFL pulled back, like some of the hits, and they're more strict on that stuff. But let's be honest.
That's safety. But the celebration stuff, we love it.
See, that they earned the nickname the NFL. They started calling
it No Fun League.
And I think they've put that hat on, and I think they've wore it very good.
I'll give credit where it's due. The past couple seasons, they've allowed more celebration. Like, I love it. And so this is almost
the ratings started to plummet. They need to do something.
But just reminiscing of the good old days before China unleashed a big virus on the world, the good old days where like last season you'd see a defensive team score a touchdown and they would do the full defensive team celebration. I love that because as someone who will play defense and you know whenever I'm playing you know flag or whatever I'm playing, I love watching a defensive player score. And watching the full team celebrate because you know if they concocted these ideas, it's like you just got guys hanging out. They do it in practices, whatever else. They're like, "What are we gonna do? What are we gonna do?" So I miss that. When do we see it again? I don't know because now you're seeing all these college seasons starting to shrink. A couple major programs.
I've seen a bunch of. Yeah. I think the Pac-12 just said that they're gonna play.
Well, I'm not sure if they did that. I know, so like Florida State and the ACC, they're only playing ACC games and one non-conference, which I would hope would be the University of Florida. But so the season's starting a little later, but a lot of these teams are saying, no, we're only going to play conference games, which shrinks the schedule down, you know, almost in half.
College football. College. You don't play very many games anyway.
Right.
College football's
right.
Not very many anyway, so you shrink that down. That's
Yeah, so but that's the but that's the first step. Who knows? It might go even further. That's the scary part. But I don't know, dude. I don't have the answer to the college football conundrum because, as we mentioned before, a lot of that has to do with, you know, politics via the state and whatnot. You know, because if every organization out there, CDC, whatever else, say what you want, if they're saying kids should go back to school, and I get it, college kids are older, whatever else, there is more of a risk factor there, but come on. Do we need to talk about death rates? Do we need to talk about this stuff every week?
Yeah, I think we do, Brandon.
Okay.
What's the current survival rate if you get COVID?
Well, if you want to average it, basically 100%. It's obviously it's not. I know that. But it's so minuscule. And I'm not trying to make light of a death, because that's, you know, deaths are important. But you can't just say if someone is 85 years old and they're basically on death's door and they test them after they die and they had COVID, but they were dying already and that's a COVID death. Come on. They fudge these numbers a lot.
I mean, you can never really get accurate numbers when it comes to that, for sure. And they've already admitted that. Dr. Burke said that in a press conference. She said they asked her a similar question about a person dying. I think the person had a heart attack, actually, and tested positive for COVID as well. She said, yes, we technically we have to list that as a COVID death.
Well,
so I'm wondering,
they changed the term
of the above.
They changed the term. It's COVID related death now.
It is what it is.
But when you have everyone out there talking like this is a death sentence, you know, when you're walking around or you don't have a mask on here or there, you're doing this and that. Listen, we all have to understand the risks for ourselves and our families and whatever else. If you are that scared to death, then stay home.
I have two people that are very close to me over the age of 60 that had COVID, and they're fine.
Yeah.
Okay, age is not just a precursor of you. Well, like if you're 85 and you get it, you're gonna die. That's not true either. If you're 85 and you have a lot of health problems, then yes, for sure, your chances skyrocket.
When a 60-year-old man goes and hits on a 20-year-old girl at a bar, he says age is just a number. Is it about the same thing?
I think so. At the end of the day, I mean, that's funny that you said that, but not making light of COVID at all, but it's true. There's been 96, 97-year-olds that have gotten it, and they've lived. So I was originally, the first couple of months, I was scared because I believed the hype, and I started going to sleep. I literally had a nightmare one time that I woke up with COVID and I almost died. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, like this is real. I was scared. They played the scare factor with me, and I bought into it. And then finally, I was just like, you know what? At the end of the day, I believe in God. And if you truly believe in God, if it's my time, it's my time, right? Like, that's how you're supposed to believe. If it's your time, it's your time. God has a plan for me, right? So I stopped being scared.
Yeah.
And as soon as I stopped being scared, things got a lot clearer for me.
Sure, sure. And I mean, and as Christians, you don't want to throw caution to the wind and basically, you know, throw your life at risk and say, God's going to take care of everything. No, you got to be prudent too.
Yeah,
but when you think clearly, when you got to the point of thinking clearly about this thing, viewing the risks, seeing the numbers, understanding who you're around, whatever else. And it doesn't mean that all of a sudden we're out there like meeting with all of our groups of friends and acting stupid. No, you take the precautions. I'll be respectful of businesses, obviously, and restaurants. They have to follow certain rules, or even if they don't and they want that, I'm respectful. I'm not going to be a jerk. But you got to be realistic too. This thing is not going anywhere. We have to learn to live with it until there's a vaccine. And then guess what? Just because there's a vaccine doesn't mean all of a sudden, poof, it's gone.
Yeah, not even close.
No, we learn how to live with it. And so here we are. Here we are. And now we're going to go bring it back to sports and understand that I applaud these guys that are getting in the ring. I applaud the guys, even the guys on the court, on the baseball diamond, whatever else, that they are actually out there for those that haven't opted out, which is pathetic.
I'm going to ask you that. It's coming.
You know me. I applaud these guys that are willing to go out there and put on a show, not only just for themselves, but for the fans. We are desperate and starving for this. I caught you mid-drink. I'm sorry.
So, Brent, I'm enjoying this little screwball. It's a new peanut butter whiskey. Somebody recommended it to me, so obviously I have to give it a try. It's pretty cool. To the Misfits, Black Sheep,
whoa.
Screwballs.
Like, how impressive is that? I forgot to tell you I'm allergic to peanuts.
Well, you know what?
I'm just kidding. I have a... Okay. No. I had my holdups when you told me this is what we were going to be drinking, because just the whole, like, flavored, you know, whiskey. Is it...
How do you... So off on a little tangent, what's your take of it so far?
It's good. I'm enjoying it. I don't think I could... Now, not that anyone should drink a whole bottle of whiskey. I couldn't drink the whole bottle. I think it's good for the flavor, but at a certain point, I don't think my palate would agree with that. But it's very good. I'm gonna have more than two or three.
A little bit more as well. Let's keep it clean right now.
So okay, let me see this. So we have a few different angles here.
Brandon's holding it up to the camera to show.
Here,
hold on
there. There you go. That is it. Oh, that is it. So for those that like the peanut butter flavor, it's not overpowering. It's very good. It's smooth, actually. There's not a bitter taste to the end of it. It's not I don't know what's the right word I'm looking for. It doesn't really have that normal whiskey aftertaste.
I'm not exactly a wordsmith, Brandon.
But we're getting there.
I'm doing my best.
We've been doing this now for like six weeks.
I think so. We have about 4 or 5 weeks worth of content. We're just, we're killing them.
This is our fifth week and the content is rolling.
Dude, we have so much content. We have content for days.
And we're getting a little better. So the audio is going to keep getting better as we figure out our mic placements. Listen, Travis and I aren't audiovisual guys. As you can see, we're here at the TH Boxing Gym. We just throw this together. We put some lights up. We get some camera angles going. Hi, over there. Hi. And then you see his. So we just kind of piece it together and it works out. Sounds pretty good. But this is a good reminder is that if you are listening to us on Spotify, iTunes, watching YouTube, wherever it is, maybe you saw us on our Facebook page, this is the shameless plug now. Please, please go ahead and like, follow.
First of all, there's no shame in my game. Okay. Give us a share, like, follow, hate. Do what you got to do, but give us some attention. I am definitely in need of that attention right now. Brandon,
so,
I need this. You want to know why I need this attention?
Tell me.
I haven't boxed professionally. Next week will be exactly a year. And you know, I'm a boxer. I'm not. It's not a team sport. It's individual sport. So like, I'm an egomaniac, and I'm not used to this non-attention that I'm not getting. So.
Which is why we're doing a podcast.
Which is why we're doing a podcast now, because Travis is obviously needs that attention. I'm kind of joking around a little bit. But seriously, guys, give us some attention.
No, this is for us, this is a fun time in order to talk boxing and talk life, talk whatever. You know, Travis and I, we've been friends and you know, for a few years, and we enjoy each other's company, and we drink this, we have a good time. And so just to sit here and talk and just kind of escape the world for a little bit, or at least vent about the world, is always a good thing, too.
And don't worry, because I give you predictions as well in boxing matches, so you can make some money if you watch our show.
You
it's
keep
a
saying
possibility.
That. You keep saying that.
There's no guarantees, Brandon.
There is no guarantee that Travis's predictions will make you money, and nor is Wayne in with Travis Hartman liable if you lose money.
Thanks for putting that in there.
This is my job over here. You're the boxing guy. You're the boxing expert.
I see. That's why I love you, because you have my back. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, anytime, buddy.
You know,
anytime.
Boxing's a singular sport, but at the end of the day, I have a team behind me, so. I feel like I'm kind of back in the ring, Brandon, and you're my chief second right now. You got my back, right?
Do I get to hold the spit bucket? Is that a thing?
Actually, I need you putting the Vaseline on me so I don't get beat up. Okay.
Ooh.
I need you to get the Vaseline on my face.
PG-13. Okay, so I'm gonna bring it back. Bring it back as best as I can, because there's no segue from that Vaseline to this.
Reel it in.
We got the calendar coming up. We got September. Exhibition, Tyson Jones Jr. We got November, Spence Garcia. Then we got December, Anthony Joshua. I didn't catch the other guy's name.
Colbert Polev.
Okay. So, and then wasn't there, there's an event local too, correct? Is that still on?
I don't think so. Boxing event locally here?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I thought the amateurs,
weren't they fighting
on something?
At the end of August, they're fighting in the, it's called the Sugarbert Classic.
That's it.
It's the Sugarbert Classic at the end of August. I actually have three fighters that will be fighting in that. And it's the qualifier, so if you win there, you make it to Nationals, which Nationals will be right here. Actually, I don't know how to say it, Brandon, but can you tell me how to say the K word? Kissimmee?
You said it right. Kissimmee.
Kissimmee.
No, Kissimmee.
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 Kissimmee. Okay, Nationals.
Don't say it.
I believe
you're
in Kissimmee.
Okay, yes.
I'm butchering that.
When you look at the name, I know the first four letters says kiss. Don't pretend it's not a word. Say Kissimmee.
But I like it when they say kiss me.
Mm.
Ooh. Okay.
Do I need to go?
Don't tell your name.
Okay.
That listener.
Okay.
I
which,
apologize.
All right. This is food time now.
Brandon needs some food time. And
so I got this nice, lovely gift here from Travis's fiance. It says, Travis Choco Choco Donuts, made with love by your love.
Ooh.
And we'll be taking a break here shortly so we can re-ice up. But I don't know. Let's see.
Irina is really good, you guys. These are homemade donuts. Like, I'm not kidding. She's actually delivers them to people now, too. Like, I'm pretty blessed to have this woman. She literally, if it wasn't for my boxing workouts, I would probably be fat and out of shape. But she does cook good stuff, though. She bakes these. Instead of frying donuts, she bakes them.
Well,
she cooks them in her oven.
As someone fat and out of shape, I will say enjoy this. I'm going to eat these. At least I'll have one of them tonight. And then I'll drink it down with peanut butter whiskey. Good Lord. What are we doing to ourselves tonight, Travis?
I'm joy.
I think that eventually we should probably have a podcast and let people know how to start living healthier lives, because outside of this, I actually do live a pretty healthy life. So I think we should start promoting that instead of our drinking and donut eating. But like I said, the donuts aren't as bad as you would think. Irina makes them with very good ingredients, and she makes them with love. So with love, it's good.
To that point, maybe another week we'll do that, but not this week. But what I would like to do here, as we are trying to pay some bills, we're going to take a soft break here. You know, we're going to come back in just a few minutes. You know, maybe we'll hit the crapper. Maybe we'll finish a donut. I don't know. Maybe
Brandon, like, now people are Quilted. Now people are thinking about that.
Quilted Northern's not our sponsor this week.
Hey guys, if you're in Orlando area, we just overprepped for a hurricane that didn't hit us, and the stores are out of toilet paper again.
Don't get me started on that fear-mongering with the news. Are you serious?
With that being said, though, Brandon.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll be back, and you won't even notice a difference. It's just going to be kind of like a interlude, and we'll be back. Oh, boy. So, with that, welcome back. We had our little pause, paid the bills, a bill.
Told a funny story.
Got a new ice cube, so that was helpful. So right when we were exiting, we had mentioned that we were just in this whole hurricane mode here in Florida, which was blown way out of proportion as always. Thankfully, I say it cynically, but thankfully it did not come through here. So I'm grateful of that, but it shortened my weekend with, I take my son out for a weekend to the beach. Then I also do the same thing with my daughter just to get alone time. You know, my wife gets alone time then with the other kid, but it shortened that up. So that kind of sucked. So I'm just bitter tonight, Travis. I'm bitter.
I couldn't tell at all.
Bitter Brandon.
I'm super happy.
Well, that's me always. I'm usually just cheery, you know, anyways. So getting back to boxing, we have those big fights coming up.
Of all time.
Is it?
Okay. Actually, yeah, we'll just go.
I would hope so, Travis. You've made a whole career of this thing.
Stop.
All right. So what I've always wondered, because as much as we spent time together and hung out, I never really ask you war stories. I never ask you this and that. It just kind of comes up. I kind of want to know some things, and I know our listeners want to know some things, because if they're listening, they're not listening because of my charm or my voice or anything like that.
That beard that he has is pretty sexy.
Maybe you are. I don't know. But they're here for you, and we want to hear from you. So I was thinking, you know what, maybe on each segment we have a little bit of time where we talk to you about your experiences in life and boxing. And frankly, I kind of wanted to know a little bit about when you were done with the amateur side, going into your first professional fight, and just kind of discuss that. I want to leave it open-ended, but I want to pick your brain and tell us about not necessarily the decision to go pro, but then becoming pro, your first fight, the lead up to that. So I'm gonna shut my stupid mouth and let you talk, because we want to listen.
It's a really good story. So I'm gonna paint you this picture and tell you the story, because it's a little bit of a detailed one of why I turned pro and when I turned pro. Because so it was 2004, Western Olympic trials were the first week of February. Well, while training for these matches, my house burns down. January 7th, I believe, my house burned down. I competed in California, Bakersfield, California, for the 2004 Western Olympic Trials. This is for a spot on the Olympic team. You know, you win this, and you give yourself a berth for the Olympics.
Yeah.
In 2004, my house burns down, you know, the second week in January. Crazy story. 3 weeks later, I go out there to Bakersfield, California, and try to qualify for the Olympics, which was just absurd in itself now that I look back. At the time, I was just like, I was focused. I love boxing. So I was like, yeah, I don't have a house, but I'm still going to box. So we did. And, you know, God bless my dad for always supporting me and taking care of me. And, you know, we got sponsors from my little town to help us pay for part of the trip, because amateur boxing, it's, you pay for it yourself. We don't get paid to fight amateur. And I fought amateur for 14 years. So that means that somebody had to sponsor me, take care of me. And most of the time, it was my dad and my mom, obviously. So they paid for it out of their pocket. But anyway, so I go out there. I lose in the quarterfinals. It's just a bad couple of months, because I got a little bit of food poisoning while I got out there. And I fought and lost in the quarterfinals. So I did decent. Lost in the quarterfinals. We get a call from a promoter back in Missouri, literally while we're in California, that says, hey, I'm putting on a show March 12th, 2004. I just finished the first week of February of my amateur career and I lost. And I remember talking to my dad. I was just like, I don't want to end my amateur career in a loss. So, but I did. So 3 weeks later, they said, hey, you want to fight on this card? I'm like, you know what? I think it's about time. I'm 20 years old. I think it's about time. Me and my dad never talked about turning pro before that. But once we had the option in front of us, and they were like, of course, I want to meet the guy in person. It was Rob Calloway at the time, who had a very successful career himself. But he was part of All American Promotions. Pretty cool little tag for that. I appreciated that. But anyway, calls me, says, hey, you want to turn pro? I say, you know what? Maybe I will. Let's meet in person and talk about it. We met in person. We signed the contract literally that first day we met. At the end of the conversation, we said, yeah, let's do it. So I turned pro March 12th. 2004 on a card that was tagged March Badness. You know, March Madness.
Was this a pro wrestling event?
Oh my God. You know what though? I thought it was kind of genius. March Badness. Still remember that to this day. That was March 12th, 2004. The fact that I still remember that is pretty wild. But the difference was, oh my gosh, there was so much hype that goes into the professional boxing. So different from amateur boxing, because nobody cares. When I fought in the Western Olympic Trials, which is a massive thing, nobody cared.
I didn't care about the Olympics.
I didn't get an entry song. I didn't get a big entrance. We walked to the ring. We got in the ring. They announced us. We fought.
Travis, period. They don't care about the Olympics. They care about March Badness.
Exactly. So that was pretty cool, though. Like, I actually bought into that. This is a true story, too. And the guy I fought, his name was Anthony Nelson. So if he's ever listening to this, it's going to be funny when he hears this, because I was so hyped that I was almost tired before the fight happened, because I'm like, yeah, walking to the ring. Like, it was so hype. The crowd was so hype, because all my friends had watched me my whole life fight amateur. Literally, I'm from a small town. So all of my fans and friends came. It was big deal. I get to the ring and I'm like, what am I doing, Travis? Oh my gosh. And legit happened. I end up stopping the guy in the second round. So the first two rounds, I'm like jabbing him. I'm like landing big right hands, stiff jabs. I get tired. At the end of the second round, the round ends. We both go to the corner. I'm sitting in my corner. I'm not even exaggerating when I tell you this. I look at my dad. I'm like, I'm pretty tired. Like, I'm dead. And guess what happened? That kid didn't come out for the third round. He quit on his stool. And I was literally like, thank you, Lord. Like, I'm like, I was winning the fight, but I was dead. I'm not kidding. Two rounds and I was dead. So, like, that's the funny story about my pro debut. If only he knew that. I just think he thought that I still had plenty left, maybe, because I'm a very good, and I always tell my fighters that I train, I'm like, listen, everybody gets tired in the fight, but it's about acting. You got to act like you're not tired, because if your opponent knows that you're tired, that's going to give them a little adrenaline. A little extra adrenaline to come get you. So I act really well, and I sold it really well. I sold it so much to the fact the guy quit on his stool. Anthony, if you would have came out for that third and fourth round, bro, Travis might not have been 1-0. Might have been a draw, I don't know, because I won the first two rounds. So I had two rounds in the bank, and it was only a four-rounder, so I could have only lost the next two, it would have been a draw. But if he only knew.
Well, I appreciate you, Anthony, because we might not be doing Weighing In with Travis Hartman in 2020, you know, because that could have sent you on a different trajectory. So I think it's so funny, you know, that it's not just about what you were doing in the ring. It's also that you had to keep a certain, you know, like you mentioned, just acting and making sure that you seemed like you weren't tired, but you were exhausted. Oh, yeah.
That's what I realized. And I'll tell everybody this. It's not only entertainment, that professional boxing compared to amateur boxing, two different animals. Because amateur boxing, in my opinion, is more of a sport. It's the true sport. You're there fighting. You don't care about all the other hoopla on the outside. You just go and you fight. You weigh in, you fight. Professional boxing, it's more of a business. They want that person that can sell. That you could be good. I mean, you could be good. But look at Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather was like 20-something and 0. Was not making any money. Bob Arum tried to cut him because he wasn't exciting. So he was winning. He was undefeated. But that's when I learned professional boxing was a business. People want to be entertained. It's good to be good, obviously, but some of the best fighters out there right now that you're seeing on TV, they're not the best fighters. They're the most entertaining.
They'll never fight for a belt or anything like that. It's just people want to see them. They want to see them fight.
And they might fight for a belt just because of that popularity, but will they win that belt? Maybe not. But there's a lot of talented guys out there, but like what separates the talented guys from the true, true champions is that entertainment value. The guy that just has that social media following now. And I bring this up because there's a guy named Ryan Garcia. He can fight. Not taken away from him. He can fight. He's with Golden Boy. He can fight, but he's got like 5 million followers on Instagram. He's never fought any big-time guys yet, but the kid's super confident. And I don't think he beats any of the top guys. However, I'm not going to bash him completely because I think the guy's good. He's very good. He knocks people out, which everybody loves to see that. So he's very, very talented. But in another era, the kid wouldn't be where he's at, period. Because he would have had to fight a big-name guy or at least a top contender and beat that kid to get on national TV. But the kid's on national TV right away because he's popular. He's a good-looking kid, too. And he signed with Oscar De La Hoya.
Well, I mean, marketing's so different now. I mean, how much self-marketing you can do as a fighter, as in anything, in any business. You don't have to rely on an ad agency. You don't have to rely necessarily on the promoter or whatever else. Whereas decades ago, man, you had to have something special. Or you had to have someone that really liked you and wanted to keep, you know, bringing you along. And I think about other industries too. I think about like comedians, things like that, because I listen to a different podcast, whatever else, and I like hearing about that culture and hearing about how they came up. And it's the same thing. I mean, they might not be the funniest guy or anything like that, but they got in the culture, they knew the right people, and it's amazing like that. And obviously I know with the sports it's different. You have to have the talent. And you have to do,
you
know,
you have to have a little bit of a talent. Like I said, sure. I think Ryan Garcia is an extremely talented kid.
But 5 million? I mean, what are you up to now? You're 2, 3, 4 million, right?
Yeah, right. I'm getting there. If these people start liking our podcast, maybe I'll get more than that. But
well, there you go.
I'm begging for followers. Actually, I'm not really. But that's also something that I would like to tell boxers that are watching this. If you're a new age boxer coming up right now, I genuinely tell you, you do got to self promote. Don't be scared to promote content. Put content out there. Put a lot of content out there on your Instagram, on your Twitter, on your Facebook. Literally, people want to see you training. They want to see you doing just anything. But put a lot of, don't be scared to, because guys, at the end of the day, I'm a promoter now as well, and I have been for 3 years. I want a guy who can sell, meaning put that content out there. We want to see it.
But it's not only that. You have to be able to let go of the comments. If you're going to put stuff out there, if you're going to try to build up that kind of a fan base, try to build up your social media presence, and you're an athlete or trying to become a professional athlete or anything like that, you now have to ignore everything that goes on, people commenting, torching you, everything. You have to.
Exactly. I think that's a great point. And that's what I'm training a couple of guys and girls that I told them, like, listen, you got to put that stuff out there and let it go, period. Because people become a lot more, you know what, it's funny, back to Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson has a quote, I think it says that people have gotten way too comfortable on their social media networks of saying stuff and not getting punched in the face. And he's right, because people can say whatever they want on the internet, and it's not face-to-face. If you said half the things you're saying to a boxer, if you said it to his face, he probably would punch you in the face. So that's why, like, times are different, and that's why I tell these people, I'm like, listen, if you post something out there, be ready, because you're going to get the trolls. But
any negative comment we get here for our podcast, Wayne In with Travis Hartman, any negative comment we get, it's just going to be some pimple-faced kid in the basement of their parents with they couldn't put their fists up to save their life. You're a professional. I'm not, but I know I could take down any of these trolls.
Let's be honest, Brandon. It
might be the peanut butter whiskey talking.
I think maybe a little bit, but I've seen you train.
That sounded a lot better in my mind before I actually said that, because that sounded a little girly.
Because, wait, it's got to be your peanut butter. That's another story. That's a bad story, actually.
I'm lost. What story is this?
Let's stay lost. Let's not. Okay. Let's not have Travis explain that because there's gonna be. A
but I enjoy this. Hey, Travis. Drink up and tell us stories, please.
There's gonna be a lot of people that just heard that and they're like, "I know what he was talking about," but I will not explain that any further.
Not today. So not yet. It's gonna come. All right. So Travis, you asked me what you think about this. What I think about this. What do you think about this? This screwball.
As a new whiskey / bourbon drinker, it's not bad because it doesn't. I mean, genuinely, it doesn't taste like a bourbon because I taste a lot of peanut butter in it. It's got flavor, and it's not the smoky flavor that you get or the wood kind of flavor that you get from a bourbon or a whiskey. It's more like I taste more of a hint of a peanut butter.
That's kind of what I want, though. This is actually if anyone from the company that makes Screwball is watching, it tastes good. It doesn't taste like a whiskey, and it's actually sitting kind of heavy, to be honest with you. So I can only drink about 6 or 8 of these.
That's pretty much the whole bottle.
Oh no! That's all I went. Well, plus the donuts. So, anyways.
That was a good talk there, Brandon. I can't believe I actually shut up and let you talk about that. I thought you were gonna spit something a little better, but
of what?
I'm a little ashamed of letting you talk about that, and then you didn't go anywhere with it.
Well, throw
you
a topic.
You can do better, Brandon.
Hey, throw
you're
a topic.
Better than that.
If this isn't just me on this seat doing this, you throw something at me, I'll talk.
I mean, we can talk sports all day, but can we talk? I want to hear your professional opinion as to why the MLB and the NBA have had plummeted ratings. Because this is perfect time for people at home, right? Because they're not allowing fans. So don't you think that people would be watching this on TV? Why are the ratings plummeted? Why is that?
I think they're always going to have the diehard fans. So I think from a rating standpoint, that's what they're getting currently is the diehards. And maybe some casuals that are just, they just need something to watch. But the fringe sports watchers, which I think make up a lot of their viewership on these sports, they have been so, they view these sports leagues as disingenuous. And I could pick them apart one at a time. And I'll take the NBA. Their whole flip-flop, not even flip-flop, their whole mess with China back last year where they hung Daryl Morey out, the GM for the Houston Rockets, out to dry basically. That rubbed a lot of fans the wrong way. Dude, I'm going to be honest with you. I used to love the NBA. I was growing up as a kid, I was a massive NBA fan. I remember coming home from church, and it always felt to me like it was going to be like the Knicks on TV against the Pacers or the Bulls or something like that. It was always like NBA on NBC. Right. So, and I was, for all intents and purposes, we live here in Orlando. I had season tickets to the Magic. For many years, they weren't good. Several years, they were. But I was a big Reggie Miller fan with the Pacers. I loved the way he played, right? And so the game was just so different then. I remember going to Orlando Magic youth camp in the summertime, and I wore my Reggie Miller jersey there, and I got torched because it was just, I think it was right after the Pacers had bounced the Magic out of the playoffs or something like that. So I just got, but I loved it because it was fun. It was fun to watch. They could have that grit. It was rough. There was still scoring, but it wasn't just flop city and all this other garbage. So I think the product itself has become so dainty. No offense to those dainty listeners and viewers of ours, but the product itself has become very dainty. And then the whole China fiasco, where they basically bowed to them.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, you have a stance on every other social issue except what's going on between Hong Kong and China. So you have nothing to say about that, which is a huge human rights issue.
Right.
Where's that at? Okay, so let's table that because I can't speak as eloquently about it as I've been drinking this. So that's that league. MLB, I don't know. I mean, they have their viewership. But what I find interesting is those two sports in particular have tried to concentrate like basically the end of their season and compress it all in a short period of time. And I look at, let's say, the NBA, and I'm like, this seems like a fake season that you're just trying to crown someone a champ. Like you're trying to crown the Lakers and LeBron a champ. That's what it feels like. It doesn't feel real.
I'm going to be honest. I think it feels like that too. And that's why I think I think I'll be shocked if the Lakers don't win it, because how good does that look right now? Like, oh my God, LeBron, big outspoken speaker right now, and he's. But you know what? I gotta speak on it. I just find it. I think you used a good word. It was disingenuous right now that LeBron James, all of a sudden, now when it's popular, he's kneeling for the anthem. I find that disingenuous because why wasn't he doing it last year? Why wasn't he doing it the year before that?
Well, you could say that about it.
Why wasn't he doing it? Why did he finally start doing it when it's comfortable? Because he's the first major athlete that ever took a stand, and he didn't take it by himself. He took it with everybody else. Why? I just question why.
Now, I'll pause you there because there was, in one of the games in particular, an Orlando Magic player, Jonathan Isaac, he did not. Now, sad story here, because the game he played last night, he blew his freaking knee out. I mean, that's like the irony of it all, right? ACL's blown, I think. But he decided to not do that. Not because, I mean, he's a black guy. Can I say that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think so. I mean, you're describing him.
Not because he didn't agree with the fact that black lives do matter, as all lives matter, is that it got beyond that that epitaph. It was, no, I think all lives do matter, but I think the only thing that can really bring us out of the where we're at as a country and as a nation is Jesus Christ. And he stuck to his guns, and I applaud that kid. That took a lot of guts in that league to do that. And actually, I'm shocked. Like, I haven't heard anything negative from players about that, which is cool. I'll give them the props.
So far.
But the props, when they're due, I'm going to give it to them. But for him, he battled back from an injury, too, to finally. That was like his first game back, really, or one of his first games back. I feel for the kid because he took a stand not only socially but also because of what he believed in his heart. And then he got hurt again. It sucks because he's a good player. I believe he went to Florida State. I'm almost positive he went to Florida State.
Orlando,
so that's why I was
a guy now. Yep.
Yeah. So more power to that kid. I know he got a lot of praise by a lot of different people for not that he's standing against.
That's the key.
BLM. It's not that. It's not that he's standing against. He's standing for what he believes in. So once again, we need to get to a point in our world where if you want to kneel and whatever else, you know what? As much as I don't want to do that, that is your right. You know, that is your right as an American to do that. It is also our right to not want to see it and not like it.
I don't agree. I don't agree with it. But at the end of the day, I'm not saying you can't do it. I don't have to like what you do. A lot of people, they misinterpret that, because I think Isaac says the right thing too. He's like, listen, when I stand, he's like, I'm not standing against your movement. He's like, I'm standing for my movement, what I believe is right. And at the end of the day, I love the slogan where, and like, people are going to give me a lot of hard time for this, because Jesus Christ has been taken out of a lot of our lives. And whether you agree with it or not, I don't. Jesus Christ teaches love. Okay. If you're a Christian, you should know that he teaches love at the end of the day, and he allows grace. We all mess up. We're all not perfect. So when I tell people that I believe in Jesus Christ, it doesn't mean that I'm a perfect person. I'm not. I'm not even close. None of us are.
I mean, religion, like our beliefs, actually teach you that. It's that, no, not just because you believe in this or just because we are saved doesn't mean all of a sudden we live a perfect life or we're better than somebody else. It's to the contrary to that. We recognize that we're a sinner, and we continuously are a sinner. We just have the grace. We have the forgiveness, and we attempt to turn away from that and repent. Big, big difference. Big difference then, and I get it. I mean, I have plenty of friends that are completely against this. They're completely against religion, completely against Christianity, and I know why. I know the reasons why. When they're honest with me, I get it. I understand why. Because sometimes it's, I don't understand if it's a loving God, how these bad things can happen in the world, or such and such person did this, but they ended up being a terrible person. Yeah, you know what? Crappy people exist in this world, and they always will. And just because we have a loving Father doesn't mean all of a sudden, broad stroke, he's going to make everyone perfect. No, it's unfortunately, that's just not reality. But it doesn't change the fact that we seek something. And I think everyone in this world is really seeking something. And they continuously do so. And I just feel, I don't know. It's hard for me to describe it, Travis.
Let me give you an example, though, because I'm glad you kind of led me into something I wanted to say, is that you're correct about a lot of people, not a lot, but there's a fair amount of people that will use religion in a bad way. Right? So this is what I want to say to all of the I guess you could say, Black Lives Movement people. If you don't want us to judge you for all of the bad people that make Black Lives Matter look bad, because there's a lot of rioters, there are a lot of guys that are doing a lot of bad things under the Black Lives Matter banner, even though the original Black Lives Matter people, maybe they cared enough. But if you don't want us to judge you for your bad, then don't judge religion and us who believe in Jesus Christ for the people that do evil. Because at the end of the day, there's both. You know what I'm saying? Like, the people that are doing Black Lives Matter, there are some people that are peacefully protesting. That is one thing. But there's also people rioting and killing under that same banner. So and I'm not saying I agree with it one way or another, but I'm saying that if you disagree with Jesus Christ because of the evil, then how is that any different than you're looking at me and wanting me to judge you and your movement any differently when you have evil killing as well?
There are hypocrisies, Travis, on all sides. There's hypocrisies on that side. There's hypocrisies on the Christianity side. I get it. It's so interesting how we got into a religious debate, or not debate, but a discussion. If I'm out in the world, people know I'm a Christian, and they see me do something wrong or a sin or whatever you want to label it as, all of a sudden I'm judged based on that, not off of anything else, not off of any the positive qualities or anything else. I'm not given that grace from the world. But you know what? I also don't need to seek it. I know who I am. I know where my convictions lie and where my faith is, and I could rest assured in that. Now, obviously I want to be a friend to people and I want to help others understand. At a certain point, they don't want to hear it. I get that too, but it doesn't mean I go away. You know, I don't know. It's a tough issue because you and I, you know, we're cut from a very similar cloth with that respect, but we also have a lot of friends in a lot of different, you know, realms. And it's tough sometimes. It is tough.
It is, because I mean, especially in my world where I've been all over the world, I literally have friends from so many different cultures. I mean, I've friends been to Asia, been to Australia, been to Europe, all over the place. I literally have friends from every different background. I mean, I have an older brother that I hate to use color. I do, because I don't like to look at people based on their color. But if we're doing a podcast right now, I have to explain to people, I have an older brother that is black. And I never, you know what's funny about this, and this is what I love about it, is that a lot of people actually don't know that I have a black brother, because every time I talk about my brother, he's my brother. He's not my black brother. He's not my white brother. So like a lot of, this is like the first time I've openly talked about in a public forum that, yeah, I have an older brother that's black. He was the first black person to ever graduate from Osborne High School. So I've seen a lot of stuff. You know, I never lived his life and I would never admit to living his life. And he lived obviously in a different era than me for sure. Like he experienced a lot of stuff on his own, but I was also there. I saw a lot of this stuff, but at the end of the day, I don't describe him. When people ask me, how's my brother's doing? What's my brother up to? I'm just like, oh yeah, my brother is doing fine. I don't say my black brother. So what I'm saying about that is I find it hard that people want to get rid of racism, but yet try to keep identifying people by the color of their skin. Meaning,
oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to get a lot of hate for this, but Black Lives Matters. Listen, we're humans. Literally, there's one race. It's called the human race. Just because somebody has a little more melanin in their skin, we got to talk about them differently. Like, stop it. Like, it's just stop it. Like, Brandon, you're a brown man as well. My fiance is from Ecuador. She's South American. But like, when I introduce Irina, I introduce Irina. I don't say, oh, my brown fiance. I don't say my black brother. But that's why I think that we have to get rid of that term and those things. Like, we're people. We're human.
But yes, and I agree with you. I think, unfortunately, there are, like you mentioned, there are people that are positively approaching this thing on both sides, but you view it differently than some other folks of your skin tone who are not going to let go of the whole racist ideology. Unfortunately, that's inherent in a sin.
In the minority, though.
But that's inherent in a sin-filled world. You cannot force someone to not be racist or not to express in such a hatred, because that's ultimately the root of it is hatred, right? And so there's no way to truly eradicate it. Now the BLM movement, it's hard to dive into that topic because there's one level of folks, I get it. you were protesting peacefully, and there's inequality in the world, because there is. You know, I've been discriminated against my whole life too. Probably not to the same degree. I get that too. I'm not trying to say like one's worse than the other, but I've experienced that. I was just raised a different way on how to handle it. Press forward, right? But then once you start getting deeper into that organization, dude, it's a lot different. Once you start reading like the actual organization and their thoughts, it's much different than the peaceful protesters out there. And they don't understand that. They don't understand the flag that they're carrying. And that's kind of scary. I don't think, let's not dive into that tonight. And this isn't the peanut butter talking. But
I do know I have to dive into it.
Go for it.
Because there's a Marcellus Wiley on ESPN.
Oh, he's great.
Solid guy, like solid. I like listening to him. He came out and he said, "Hey, you know, I'm for Black Lives Matter." He goes, "But I'm not for the Black Lives Matter movement,
the organization. No.
Because he goes, "You know why?" He goes, "Have you ever been to their website? You want to listen to what they say?" And I'm going to read it word for word from their website, guys. They say, "We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure." So if you don't know what that means, they're trying to bring your intelligence out. That means that they don't like a mother and a father in the home. And to me and to Marcellus Wiley, as a black man, he's a black man. Marcellus Wiley said, "I don't agree with that." He goes, and if you listen, even Barack Obama said it in one of his State of the Union speeches that we need. He's like, if you're a black American and you only have one parent in the household, the chances of you going to prison, committing a crime, it's like 80. Crazy. And Barack Obama even said, we need two-parent households. And that's not just for blacks. I'm talking about whites as well, because white people go through the same struggles. We're not any different in that regard, because there's a lot of white people that have one-parent homes. I know this for a fact. It happens a lot. It's happened to a lot of my friends. So the fact that Black Lives Matter, that's part of their motto and they're about them, that we disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement, I have a serious problem with that. So this is me coming out. I'm not for the Black Lives movement that you see. You know what I'm for? I am for Black Lives. I agree with Black Lives Matter. I agree with that. Do I agree with their platform, Black Lives Matter, and how they're projecting and making all this political? I don't, because if you look into Black Lives Matter a lot, you're going to find out that it's a lot more political than you think.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think it's, I bet you it's 90% of people have probably never been to the website and understand what the actual organization, you know, the same organization where all these corporations are stroking a check to, they're the ones getting the money, by the way, this organization. It's not the people marching that are getting any check or anything like that. They don't understand what this actual organization, their tenants, they don't understand what they truly believe in. And that is that one item, because there's others. Let's just talk on that one. All the statistics show when it comes to crime, prison, all these things, it's such a massively high correlation to the fatherless households. Doesn't matter if you're black, like you said. Doesn't matter. White, anybody. When the father is out of the home, and trust me, I'm not saying that, I get it. Fathers leave because they suck. Some fathers leave because they're jerks. They just, maybe they came from the same situation. So I'm not trying.
Overall situation. Overall. But just because you have a two-parent home doesn't mean that you're automatically.
No, there's plenty of psychopaths. Psychopaths also come from two-parent households. But the statistics show as that there's been a degradation of the household from two parents to one. So has our society degraded, and prison and drug use and all these things. I mean, it is clear as day, but no one wants to talk about that.
And I would like to just bring up again that I have to thank Marcellus Wiley. This is only a couple of weeks ago that I heard him talk about this. I have to bring his name up because I agree with a lot of what he was saying. And he said, one, he said that he doesn't agree with that. And he goes, two, he's like, I just want to tell you guys right now. He goes, one, I'm a black man and I have my own show on ESPN. And he goes, and you're also a black man and you're my co-host. And he goes, you want to know something else? He goes, did you know the person that I replaced was also another black man? He goes, so we've had many opportunities. I've had many opportunities. And I'm able to sit right here, right now on ESPN as a black man speaking from a place of power and to tell you guys that, you know, I've had opportunities and I've had chances and the color of my skin didn't stop me from having that. And that's, this is my only problem with this movement is, and this is what I teach my kids that I train as well, is you're always going to have setbacks, but listen, don't listen to people when they tell you that you can't do something. And just because somebody tells you you can't do something, it doesn't mean that you need to go be a victim. You can still be a victim and then go on and do great things. Don't let people tell you that you're a victim, if that makes sense. When people start telling you that you're a victim, they're excusing your misfortunes. They're excusing your maybe lack of hard work, maybe lack of something, and they're wanting you to fail, and they're giving you excuse why to fail. And sometimes it does happen, but at the end of the day, I think people that truly want to succeed, they will and they do. Are there obstacles in the way? Yes. Is there some people that have experienced serious racism? Yes. But you look at it, the people that truly want to persevere, they do. And that's all I'm saying. Like, and it's, I think it's our duty as well, Brandon, to call out racism when we see it.
Sure.
100%. This is a group effort. And I agree with that 100%. You got to see that, you call that out 100%. But we have to stop telling that our kids that this is why they're failing. No, it's not. You can succeed. You're telling black children right now, I think we're painting a picture to black children in America that tells them you're inferior. That's literally what the Black Lives Movement, they're telling you, they're inferior. You're going to get racism. You're going to have this. You're going to fail because of this. And I don't believe that.
So it's not only that, not only pointing that out, they're also pointing that it's because of them. It's because of this group or because of this. They should, instead of be pointing at accusers and whatever, they need to be pointing the way to success, the way to build. Instead, we're tearing down. And it's disheartening, but we live, no matter what we go through, we still live in the greatest country in this world. Politics aside, people hate each other because some guy likes Trump, some guy thinks Biden might be a good choice, even though I don't even...
Have you heard anybody say that?
Not technically. I actually think that any of his videos that come out are deep fake videos at this point, because half the time he says he doesn't know where he is. So, that being said, we still live in the best country in this world. If Biden wins the presidency, we're still in the best country in this world.
If Trump wins,
we're still in the best country of this world.
Period. I think that the United States of America is the biggest melting pot in the world.
And we will figure this out. We always do. And this has been a long time coming. I get it. It's like a powder keg went off. I get it. Okay? And something needed to be addressed. But we don't need an organization like this to hijack it when you don't really truly understand what their motives are. And that's scary because their motives are clear. On their website, you can go.
I read that. What I read was word for word from the Black Lives Matter website, word for word. We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement, period.
That's just one. I've read other tenets that have to do with property rights, things like that, wanting to take away. I mean, it's, guys, know what you are marching for, guys and gals. Know what you're marching for. Know what you're protesting for.
What you're donating to. Think about that as well. When you're donating this money, maybe ask more questions. What are you donating to? Where are your money going? Because last I heard, they had a big donation as well for all these people that are bailing out of jail for these protests. And I believe they used like less than $1 million of that. And they got like $30 or $40 million. And where'd that money go to?
Where's it go? Ask we have a lot of stuff going on underneath our noses that's starting to come to light. It'll be interesting to see how it plays a part into the election season and into next year. It's funny that a lot of celebrities and high-profile people have gone silent and missing because there's a lot of accusations out there that are starting to come to light. We're not going to talk about it today because we're running a little long. I think we're going to wrap it up, but we're living in a very interesting time. Stay woke, folks. This is what staying woke is. It's not marching for a cause. It's understanding what could be the undercurrent, understanding what is currently going on underneath our noses, what's being covered up. And I'm not talking about the aliens and the Air Force covering that up.
I this is what I always tell people, and I've always been a why guy. I always ask a lot of questions, and that's all I'm asking. I think that a lot of the population right now, mainly in the United States, I think there's a lot of propaganda thrown at all of us on both sides, 100%. So I just encourage people, literally, ask a lot of questions. When you find out people that are trying to play on your emotions, they're trying to use your weaknesses against you. So ask some questions, stand up, don't be afraid, and literally ask questions.
Do your research. And to kind of draw back to where we first started talking about with regard to the BLM sort of situation, racial issues, talk to your friends. Talk if you have friends of another race, just talk to them. Get a sense for how they feel and empathize. I mean, I think it starts with that. It starts heart to heart. It starts on the person level, not these organizations telling us what to think and feel. Talk to people.
I mean,
try to understand from an empathetic point of view, not because of, you know, you see all these people marching and shouting and chanting. Well, what difference does that make if you don't really truly understand the impact to them personally?
You know, I read a stat today, Brandon, that said more people have died in this Black Lives Matter movement than all black people combined in the last couple of years. Meaning the riots, the protests, the police officers have been killed. There's been people that are protesters that have been killed during all this as well. I just read, I think it was like 40-something people have died during this whole Black Lives Matter movement. Versus police, I'm saying. There's been more people killed right now during the Black Lives Movement than police killed altogether, combined, last year.
Sure, honestly, it's nasty out there, and I think those that are rationally thinking on either side of a political aisle understand that. This has been hijacked. This isn't about what it first started as, and if we want to get to the heart of the matter, that is it. It's the heart.
It starts at home. It starts at everybody's homes. Have a conversation with your kids. And you know what? At the end of the day, the funny thing is, I train a lot of kids of all colors. And
sure.
The thing about it is that most of these kids genuinely don't see it. They're not being affected by it. So I don't even want to have a conversation with them to bring it up because I feel like I'm bringing it to their attention that it's never been there. And they're fine. They're happy-go-lucky. I'm training kids, multicultural kids together. They don't know that the other kid is a different color. They don't know the other kid comes from a different background.
But
they
even
just
if
know they're having fun because kids, they just emit love because they are. And the parents are the ones that are getting in there teaching some hate if that does happen.
Even if they understand that their friend is a different color, I don't think they care. I think what they eventually care about is, does this guy like Mike Tyson or Roy Jones Jr., Errol Spence, or Danny Garcia?
Who's he picking?
Doesn't matter.
That's the real answer to this whole thing. When we bring this all back is, who's going to win? Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr., Errol Spence, Danny Garcia. Is Anthony Joshua going to knock out Colbert Polev so he can eventually fight Tyson Fury? Or what's going to happen?
Listen,
have all the answers.
This is the beauty of sports. It's pure. It can be pure if they allow it to be. When you look back to the original civil rights movement, I think sports played such a massive role in getting, you know, our country on the right track, because it was about the sport. It eventually became about the sport.
I genuinely believe that sports, not just in this country, in the world, that's why we have the Olympics, because I believe sports brings us all together. And like I said, people are going to hate me. Like, there's one race. It's the human race, period. When I see you cross the way, like I said, you're Brandon. Like, people are going to say, oh, Travis, you're full of it because you see a color. And I'm like, I don't, man. Like, I treat people how they treat me.
Well, now I feel bad that last week I referenced you being a skinny white boxer.
I mean, but you're not wrong.
I was just jealous because you're skinny. So, listen, there's no good way to wrap this up because this was a pretty tough topic to deal with. And I think we're going to dive into a little bit more of it here and there because it's important. It's what's going on around us. You know, it feels like the whole world's on fire. But you know what? You at home, listening and watching, you're the only ones that can put the fire out. And that starts at the home. That starts with your family or your friends. It doesn't start top down. It starts bottom up. Let's go ahead and wrap it up here. You know, we're gonna come together again next week. We appreciate your support. If you haven't already done so, please follow us. Give us a like or a little emoji heart or I don't know. What do they do now?
I mean, there's so many.
I'm out of the game, Travis.
Like I the game is going so fast, Brandon. That
I'm on MySpace. Is that a thing?
Not on MySpace. You stop it. You stop that talk right now.
Does anyone have Vine anymore? I have that.
We are so out of touch right now. We need help. If there's anybody out there that can actually help us, please reach out and help us. But to be serious, we don't just weigh in on sports and boxing, guys. We weigh in on all topics, as you can see, and we're comfortable talking about that stuff. And I'm happy to talk about that stuff, and I hope that everybody listening to this, they know that when we speak about this stuff, Brandon, we speak about it through love. We're not vilifying anybody.
And to be very clear, look, we're not even talking because we drank too much. We barely had any of this peanut butter stuff.
We just tasted it.
Good luck drinking the rest of that. So with that, we thank you for your time and spending, a little over an hour with us. It's awesome. We have fun doing this. And if there's anything you want to hear us talk about, mention it to a comment. Email us, wayneinth@gmail.com. You can follow us on the socials, on the YouTube, whatever the kids are doing, we're there. All right, I think.
Weighing in with Travis Hartman. We're all over the place. Right. We're going worldwide.
All right, so with that, that's Travis Hartman.
That's Brandon Waters.
Every week I say we're going to get it. One of these weeks we are. So cheers. It's been fun. And we'll see you next week. God bless. This has been Weighing In with Travis Hartman. Thanks again for listening to our ramblings. And for the latest and greatest ramblings, please subscribe below or give us a like. We appreciate it. Thanks.